You are listening to the Business Society podcast, formerly known as Think Like a CFO. The Business Society is a podcast for entrepreneurs and business owners, where we talk all about what it means to be an entrepreneur and manage the money in your business and personal life. I'm your host, Melissa Houston, and I am a CPA with over 20 years of experience working with entrepreneurs just like you. And I am here to share my knowledge and love of all things business. Check out my blog at thebusinesssociety.co and make sure you check out my articles at Forbes.com. Naomi Davis, named a Forbes Top 10 Parenting Influencer, shares happy and helpful stories across her social media channels and award-winning website. What started in 2007 as an online journal about her newlywed life in New York City while being a Juilliard dance student, Love Tazza has amassed a loyal following, reaching millions around the world. Now, Naomi continues to inspire audiences with vibrant photos, engaging videos, and heartfelt words that document her adventures parenting five young children, traveling near and far, celebrating life's simple joys, and finding purpose in the everyday. As at Tazza, Naomi has created and produced dozens of successful branded campaigns for top companies, large and small. Fun accomplishments include launching a limited edition family travel collection at Target stores nationwide, and being invited to the White House by Michelle Obama to discuss the former First Lady's Let's Move initiative. Alongside her husband, Josh, Naomi lives in a sort of always messy home with five little cookie monsters that like to sing, dance, read, tell jokes, make toast, or do anything else to delay their bedtimes. Hi, Naomi Davis. Welcome to the Think Like a CFO podcast. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Well, Melissa, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
You are truly an exceptional published author now, aren't you?
I am officially a published author, yes, as of this last month.
Yeah, and you are a parent influencer and a blogger extraordinaire. And I have to tell you, before we settle into this conversation, I was on your website, and one of the first videos that popped up was a trip to Mont Tremblant. And for those of you who don't know, that's in Canada where I live. And it's actually like a 2-hour drive from where I live.
Oh, it's
and
beautiful.
It's a common destination.
Oh gosh, yes. We were there, I guess it was last February of 2020. And our flight got canceled on our way. And we were at the airport. We were already waiting for it. And everything just got canceled. We ended up just renting a car at the airport and doing the 10-hour drive instead, which I don't necessarily recommend with five little ones, but it's beautiful up there. We had a great time. I think we'd love to come back maybe when it's not so cold. It was pretty cold, right?
But I watched the whole video, and the kids were learning how to snowboard, and you're going down the gorgeous mountains and stuff. It looked like a great trip. And yeah, of course, I was just excited because it's like Mont Tremblant. So I had to put that out there. I have more American listeners than I do Canadian, but I do have my Canadians out there listening. So a shout out for Canada. So I would love to hear more about your book and how you became a published author.
Yeah. So my book, A Coat of Yellow Paint, it just launched, and it's been a couple years in the works. It's a collection of essays. I really explore being a mother, a friend, wife, lots of topics that I haven't opened up about publicly in the past. I've been blogging for 14 years now. So I really feel like I've been able to find that voice and that community, which I've loved. But this is kind of taking it a step further, a little bit deeper, just because over the last few years, I feel like I've kind of found my footing with a few things that I've navigated in life. Body image, we'll get into here, and my experiences wanting to become a mom with infertility in my early 20s, which was really difficult for me since I was in my early 20s and it wasn't as common. Mm-hmm.
And certainly would have been unexpected.
Yeah, it was. And it was hard to find support. And so I really feel like as I've grown in owning my experience and my story, I've also really grown in that confidence of hopefully being able to own it to a point where I I just want to lend that support to anybody else that's going through challenges in their life. And for me, especially navigating the internet, which I've done since I've been blogging since 2007, I feel like I've been able to pick up a few tools just with the noise of life. Like there's just this constant feedback everywhere, just even if you're not online. And I was hopeful with this messaging, this bigger umbrella of moving through the noise to really love the life you live, that I could hopefully give a few of those tools back to women and especially new mothers as they're navigating that, whatever that noise looks like to them.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful message. And I do love that. Now, how did you find time to write a book when you've got five little ones? I mean, that's crazy. What a huge accomplishment.
Yeah. You know, I've really become a big believer in like, so for me, like no day looks the same. And I've really learned that if I have 20 minutes, I can bust out. I feel like you could bust out a novel after you've learned to kind of try to figure out how to move through getting things done. I feel like before I had kids, it would take me days to write like a paragraph. And now you have to just get so narrow focused. You're like, I've got 20 minutes, like everybody is asleep, or I just started an episode of Daniel Tiger, so I know that I have 20 minutes where I am uninterrupted. And somehow I feel like I've just honed in on that ability to just take 10 minutes here, an hour here, a pocket here, whatever it might be, and just make it count. But I really do think it's such a crazy time, and it's hard. There's a season for everything. And for myself, I think it's important that everybody understands that when you're juggling so much, you have to give yourself that grace, because it's hard to get things done. And here, you know, last year there was no childcare, and my kids just don't understand personal space. We just have this sort of family dynamic where if I'm sitting here, that chair over there is no longer appealing to you. You want to sit on my lap here in this chair with me. So I think, you know, I sat in my car a lot. That was kind of like my office bubble where nobody seemed to find me or disrupt me. The back of my closet was a spot too. There's actually a reel on my Instagram of me sitting on the floor in my bedroom trying to work on my edits last summer. And my daughter she's like huddled in my lap wanting me to play with her hair. She always just says, like, she was two at the time, "Mama, play with hair. Mama, play with hair." So I'm just like trying to type with one hand as I'm combing through her hair with the other. And it's a very unique time, but it got done. Somehow it still happened, and it's out and it's done. And I feel like I'm breathing a little more now. There's not as much of this frantic, like, oh shoot, like I need to make sure I'm doing this and this. But
yeah, it's an amazing accomplishment and a wonderful book. It's very uplifting. I had to look through it myself, and I love the stories. Now, I'm curious to know, like, from an entrepreneur's perspective, when you started blogging, what were your biggest challenges, or what were you looking for when you started blogging? Was it like more of a hobby? Did it grow into something that you didn't expect?
Yeah, I feel really fortunate that I got into blogging when I did. In 2007, it was a very different setup than what we see now. This was before the birth of social media. It was before big brand partnerships. There was no such thing as an influencer or anything like this. And so I was in my senior year at Juilliard. I got my BFA in dance from the Juilliard School in New York City, and I had just gotten married. So the blog was just this way of sharing. It was like a visual journal in a way. So I could upload my wedding photos and the newlywed life in New York City. And it really was a form of documentation for me. And I so enjoyed that. I was new to this whole world of photography and videography and everything else. I really loved that this lended a space to capture that and document it and keep it kind of organized in that way. And honestly, it grew organically those first couple of years. I think it was within a couple of years, it was getting a million absolute unique visitors each month when there really wasn't advertising for blogs. It was really word of mouth. And so I do feel fortunate because I was able to build a community there. And I really felt like it wasn't for any other purpose than to connect with women around the world as we were exploring life in my young 20s and kind of documenting snippets of it along the way. And so it was about maybe 4 years in, something like that, that I realized that maybe there was an opportunity here to make an income, to monetize it in a way. And I think back then it was really just like ad banners on the side of your blog and things like that. But I feel fortunate because I really have been able to carve sort of an entrepreneurial path that has provided income for my family, really with just documenting the day-to-day life and things that I love and highlighting all of that through a platform. that's grown too, you know, as Instagram was born or Twitter or all these other sorts of things, you're able to kind of find a way to bring that in and change and adapt things. You know, blogs aren't necessarily as big as they were back in 2007, 2010. It's definitely more social media based. But I think I was able to find my voice then. I was able to also find like the reason behind connecting and stay true to that, which I'm grateful for, because I think right now, especially with instant gratification, you know, people look at this industry, influencers or any content creators, and they think like, oh, I really want to capitalize on that. I want to get into that. I want to be able to do that. And I think when you're able to find a reason beforehand of like, oh, this is what I really love, and this is the reason behind it, I think it really helps ground you, and it gives you that longevity too, because it's easy burnout in this industry for sure. And it's this idea of like keeping up, but if you can find that reason, that grounding reason of like what it is that you're doing and why you're wanting to do it, I think it can really benefit you in the long run.
So for content creators who are just starting out, are you saying that it's difficult to make a career out of it now, or is it just more challenging?
So I really believe that there's room for everybody. I know sometimes people say like, oh, I think it's kind of already that ship sailed. Like if you didn't get in at a certain time, like it's really hard to find your voice or find an audience. I really think that if you're sharing what you love, or you're sharing, you know, something very specific and focused, and you keep at it, I think that there's room for everybody to do something there. I think what's harder about it is just the idea, you know, sometimes people get into it thinking like, I just have to have all these numbers. Like I have to have this many eyes. I have to have this many followers or this many likes in order to feel like you're actually making a difference or you're finding success or whatever it is. And I don't believe that, because I even think sometimes you could look at an account that has 20 million followers, but you know, what is their engagement like? What is their connection like with their community? And I think it's valuable to be able to step back and just really think like, what is it that I want to put out there? And if you're true to that and you're consistent, because sometimes we might, you know, it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. But if you're consistent with it, I think that you really can find a loyal community in the online space to really build whatever it is that you're looking to build.
That's really good advice. Now, what types of tips would you give for people who are trying to enter as a content creator?
I think sometimes, especially because it's such a big sort of industry now, I think sometimes you can look really easily and see what's successful for somebody and say, oh, that's what I need to be doing. And I think it's especially important, as I said earlier, with like the burnout thing too, is just to look at what is it that you love? What is it that you want to put out into the world? What is your messaging or the idea behind whatever it is that you love? Because that's what makes you unique and different and will stand out compared to the hundreds of thousands of people that are sharing in the online space. So I think the biggest tip is to take a step back and really make sure that what you're putting out there is you. And really unique and special and worthwhile. My biggest thing at the end of the day is I always say like, I'm hopeful that what I'm putting out is worth somebody's time just as much as what I hope as a consumer, what I'm getting back and taking away is also worth my while. We're all so stretched thin, right? For our time and our minutes. And so I really think it's important to make sure that whatever it is that we're trying to bring to the space is worth somebody's time so that they want to remain and be there and be a part of the community you're building.
Absolutely. And make it enjoyable. It's something that you enjoy doing, like you said, so you don't burn out. I love that. Now, for entry purposes, we have so many different social media platforms now. I mean, would you suggest starting with a blog or starting on Instagram or Facebook? There's so many choices.
I know. I think it's funny too, because sometimes we get frantic thinking we have to stay active on all of these platforms all day long too. And I think you have to pick one or two that you really enjoy and kind of hone in on those. You can still absolutely have accounts and share wherever, but I think it's really nice to kind of pick a couple that you want to focus on. I do really believe at the end of the day, especially with social media, we don't necessarily own any of that content that we're putting out on Facebook or on Instagram or any of these things. It's a little bit scary when you think about it. When you're building a brand or you're building a career on something that can be so glitchy, you know, algorithms change. It's not necessarily as stable as we like to think it is. So I do believe like if you can build a newsletter subscription, if you can go back to a blog, a website that you own that content, whatever it is that you're putting there, I do think it's really valuable. So even if you love Instagram, or Facebook, if you take that and still put it somewhere where you have it. So if something, heaven forbid, crashes someday or whatever it is, you still have that. And hopefully you have a community that is there with you as well. So
what are the platforms that you focus on?
So I really love Instagram and my blog. And lately I've been with the book and writing more, I've really loved going back to that longer form written entries. The essays in my book really reminded me of sometimes, with Instagram, it's so easy because it's on my phone. And if I'm out with the kids and it's a quick day, I can write a caption on the go and a photo on the go. And it just feels doable. And sometimes sitting down at a computer to write something long form formats, just, it feels more daunting in this season of my life, but I really do enjoy that and hopeful to go back to that more and more. So as I've been doing that, I've been pushing those out also on my newsletter with longer format, like little letters is what I call them and things like that for, so they can show up in somebody's inbox.
Now, had you always had the intent when you started blogging that this was going to be your bread and butter, if you will?
No, and it's so funny. So I went to school for dance and I really believed I was going to be a dancer forever and ever. It was such a fine direction and a very specific outlet. But I've just always loved to create, and the blog really gave me that sort of umbrella to explore writing more, photography, editing, all of that sort of stuff. It was a few years in that it started, I realized like, oh, this might be something that could be a job in a way. Although it's been tricky. I've tried not to ever look at it as a job because I think that that can be difficult with the creative element, business aside. But it was about 6 years in, I guess, that my husband, Josh, he worked in finance in New York City. He was with Bank of America at the time. And he resigned from his job to come in and help me full time with the business side. So I've never really seen myself as a business person. I've really struggled with that element, that side of our work, but he is so great with that and so savvy that we were able to really join forces and continue to build this together. He's always been a big part of the creative side. Like even from the beginning, he was so supportive and helpful with taking pictures and whatever, all the crazy ideas I wanted to do back in the day. But it's been really nice to be able to have that support as I've learned the business side and also have him help me kind of navigate that, I guess. You know, especially back in the day, it was so new, this sort of advertising and brand partnerships. And we've done brand partnerships to licensing deals. We had a luggage line at Target, just lots of little things where I'm like, I don't know how to approach that, or I don't know necessarily what would make sense. So it's been wonderful. It's been a great challenge to kind of take on a little bit more of like a business hat, but it also has been helpful to have him help me navigate a bit of that.
Do you have any idea how lucky you are to have that? So many business people don't have a clue how to manage their finances.
Yeah, I do feel really fortunate because I didn't even know like what an ROI was or anything like that.
Yeah.
I actually, the first kind of big partnership that we explored was back in, I think it was like maybe 2010 in Washington, D.C. We were living on Capitol Hill and we met with Sweetgreen, one of the founders, Nate Rue. They had just one, I guess maybe you don't have Sweetgreen in Canada. It's a salad shop.
Yeah, no, unfortunately
so
not.
It's actually big here now, kind of. I mean, it's all over the place, but they had just one in Georgetown. And we sat down trying to understand what would make sense with a partnership. They'd never done anything like this. And I had never done anything like this either. So we were trying to understand how to make it mutually beneficial. And, you know, it's really important to me to make sure that if I'm working with a brand or a partner that I'm promoting a product, that they get what it is that they're hopeful, the messaging across or whatever it might be. But I also have felt really important as I really value my audience. And I feel like everyone's so savvy these days with ads and product placement and everything else. Like I want it to be weaved in organically. I want it to be something that I use, something that I believe in, something that I stand behind. And I love to build that story around it versus just like holding a product in my hand with my face and taking a picture and being like, this is this and X, Y, and Z, please buy this. So we created this whole story around building a salad together in the park and kind of sharing an ingredient list so that people could take it home and build it themselves. But that was kind of the point where my husband was just so great at saying like, well, let's do something different. Because when we were approached each time about an ad or a sponsored post, it was really asking to take a picture of an item and post it on the blog and make sure we shared three or four sentences that were hitting their talking points. And it just didn't feel organic. It didn't necessarily make sense. And so I loved Josh had this great approach. He was like, well, let's build a story around it. And that's what we did with Sweet Green. And that's what we've really worked hard to do since. Like, we've had big brands come to us and ask to do something. And it's like exciting to have them want to work with us. But if we aren't able to do that in a way that can highlight their brand or their product, but also weave it into something that's easier, I guess, maybe to digest in a way, you know, if we can take out like a sunscreen and we can take it out throughout the day in our adventure as a family and kind of highlight it through a series of little adventures together. I think it's just, we've seen it be much more successful. And we've actually seen brands who were hesitant come back and say, actually, that really worked for us. Like, let's do that again. So I think that it's all about, as you're carving your own path and trying to find a way to bring in a business aspect, I think it's really important to kind of make sure you're staying true to what it is that you're doing and putting out there as you're bringing that in. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. Even as you described it, it just felt so much more relatable and more relaxed.
Like, and it's so much more fun. Even as someone that consumes a lot of content, I love being able to see something that's just so well done. You know, when somebody takes something and turns it into an ad and they're able to really create just a good feeling around it, right? Like, I think it really speaks to, like, for me, I'm like, I want to try that. I'm going to buy that or whatever it might be. It's been really fascinating for me as someone that's kind of carved my own path as an entrepreneur. And as this sort of business has kind of become a bigger thing in terms of influencers or bloggers or just content creators, you know, it's an industry that sometimes isn't necessarily taken seriously. It's really fun to poke fun of like influencer culture, all of these sorts of things. But I've really realized that whatever it is that I'm doing and putting out there, I really want to be proud of it. And I want to do it for myself without that sort of outside validation. And I think sometimes that's hard, especially when you're a small business owner or you're really carving your own path. Like for me, I had gone to school for dance and it felt very focused that this is what I needed to do in order to make everybody really proud of me. You know, my parents had worked really hard to help me get to a point where I could afford dance lessons and then to go to a great school and then teachers there who were confused when I graduated and didn't necessarily want to pursue dance professionally. And I think as I've kind of carved this own path, I've realized with time, 14 years now, like sometimes people still don't understand what I do. It's hard. It's like, what's your elevator pitch? I don't really know. Like, you know, I take pictures, I write blog posts. Sometimes people think like, oh, how cool is it what you do? Like you don't even work and you're able to like, but there's so much that goes into it, right?
Oh, you work hard.
Yeah, there's so much behind the scenes, you know? And sometimes I want people to be able to respect it, I guess, or think like, wow, you've built this, or your husband resigned to come in to help you with what you've built. And I've realized that I actually, at the end of the day, and I think it's important for anybody with anything that they're doing, is you have to just be able to sit with it yourself and not look for that outer validation, because oftentimes it might not be there. And you have to feel like you're happy. You feel successful. You know that what you're putting out there is valuable or good or you know, honest work. And that's just been really, it's something that's taken a lot of time to get to realize that at the end of the day, I have to sit with it. And I need to know that I thought of myself.
For sure, it's common for entrepreneurs to say that it's the most introspective journey that you go on as an entrepreneur, because, you know, you're always reflecting on the vulnerability of putting stuff out there, whether it's going to be received well or not, if you've had failures. I'm curious to know, speaking of failures, has it always been smooth sailing for you? Or have you had... No,
it hasn't. Only because I think too, like it's been important to me to prioritize family life. I've always wanted to be a mother and I had kids young and I have five of them now. And there's been times where I've been really hard on myself because there are things that I want to do that aren't feasible right now. Or there's been opportunities, a few things that have come up that I haven't been able to say yes to because I know like I don't have the bandwidth for that, or I would be taken away from, you know, this is a fast chapter that's already getting away from me. And I struggle a lot with looking back and being like, oh, what if I would have done that? Or what if I would have done more of this? And I think it's a really dangerous game to play. And I try really hard to live in the moment and not look back. But there's times where I kind of like, I'm like, do I regret not doing that? Or do I regret doing this. And yeah, you could, you can go build an empire if you want with whatever. But I think you have to look back and sit down and say, like, what's my end goal? And for me, my end goal really was to make sure that I was present as much as I could be in this chapter with my kids. And I think I'm really grateful that I was able to kind of find this entrepreneurial path that lended itself to allow me to have this time with my family, you know, family first, work second, sort of scenario for now for this chapter that I'm in. But going like what you're saying too about as an entrepreneur, this introspective sort of looking back, I don't know if a lot of other women feel this, but I feel that especially as a woman who's kind of navigating my own path, because, you know, my husband resigned 6 years in and came in to help. And sometimes I feel like a lot of people credit Love Taza's success to the fact that, well, if that's because of your husband, or that's because, you know, yes, he's done a lot to help me build this brand and this platform. But I don't like discrediting what I've done too. And I think it's hard going back to that outer validation sort of thing to remind myself that that's not what it's all about. We went, like, I was a keynote speaker once at this conference with thousands of people, and my parents came and my in-laws came, and we took them out for lunch after, Josh and I, and both my parents and Josh's parents. And it was no sort of like ill will intended, but they both thanked him for the meal because we bought lunch, and they both were like, oh, thank you so much, Josh. That was so... And I was thinking to myself, like, wait a minute, we're here because, you know, it's funny how that kind of... I've really always kind of carried that too, being a woman who's kind of built this, that I'm like, why are we not thinking me? Like, why is it Josh? Which, and I'm not trying to discredit anybody. And sometimes I think it's a generational thing too, but, you know, I have to remind myself, like, this is what I've built and this is what I've done, and I'm happy and I can sit with that, and I don't need anybody else to kind of toot my own horn, if that makes sense.
It totally makes sense. And what surprises me, I mean, not so much because of the parental comments that you received, because it is a generational thing, you know, and I'm not saying that it's okay, but I can see my parents saying something like that. But what surprises me when you're talking about this is that people would think that your husband is the driving force behind your success, because you are the...
Yeah, they'll say like, oh, you're the face of it, but it's working because he's there or whatever it is. And I don't want to discredit, like, obviously, I think we make a really good team and it's working because we're both there and we're both driving this together and we work well together. I mean, he's able to carry more of a business side and I'm more creative or whatever, but we often cross paths with what it is that we're doing in the day in, day out. But yeah, it is really interesting, I think, sometimes. And as I'm raising, I have three daughters, two sons, but I want them to know that they can put something out there in the world and own that and not feel like they need to make sure that they can have that success, if that makes sense, on their own and collaborate or have it be a team effort, whatever it is, but you don't need this sort of crutch of like somebody else to bring on to help you do that. Like sometimes I look back, I'm like, I think I could still have found this success on my own, if that makes sense. It would look very different and maybe it would have completely flopped. I don't know. But I think sometimes you have to give yourself that sort of grace, I guess, to not look outside and say like, but what about me?
Yeah. It's kind of like seeking the external validation, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And just knowing that, you know, what you've done is beyond good enough. It's what you're doing is fantastic. And knowing that within.
Yes. And I think we look at it, you know, for so long, it's like, oh, well, you know, people will poke fun that know me well, like, wait, what? Like, you can't do that. You don't even know simple math, because I truly struggle, like leaving a tip on, you know, a check at a restaurant. But I think that you have to set that aside and not let that stop you, I guess. You know, you have to be able to say like, you can create a career out of an industry that doesn't even exist if you want to. You can absolutely do that. If you're passionate about it, you believe in it, you want to carve your own path, like do it. Because back in the day in 2007, like what even was a blog? And there wasn't any of this that there is since. So I think it's just important to not let any of those outer voices find way into your head, but also not to let any of that outer validation that we often seek as human beings, which is typical, get in the way either of what it is that you want to do and how you want to execute it.
Absolutely. And just to add a little bit to that, just from the finance perspective that I always carry, is when you're saying like, oh, people say that I could never have done that because I don't know math or whatever. I mean, as I listen to your story, I love to believe that if you hadn't partnered with your husband, you would have partnered with somebody who would have offset your weaknesses. So you still would have been a success. You just would have chose a different partner. And that person would help you. Like, you play on your strengths. Every entrepreneur needs to play on their strengths. And when we have weaknesses, we reach out for help.
Exactly. And asking for that help. And that's exactly what I knew I needed at that point, is I knew that I couldn't carry this any further on my own without that help. And I think, yeah, that's like a whole other topic of like being a woman who is like, should I ask for help? Yes, ask for help. Absolutely. Yes,
exactly.
Don't carry it all.
Exactly. Somehow we seem to feel that we need to do everything. And that's just, especially as an entrepreneur with five little kids, you can't do it all. It's okay to ask for help. So I have absolutely loved this conversation with you. If there's one thing that you really want an entrepreneur to take away from this conversation today, what would that be?
Back at my own sort of scenario, I can say like, yes, I was lucky with timing, or I was fortunate that maybe my husband was a little more business savvy or whatever it is. But I really think, especially from the entrepreneur mindset, if you believe in something and you really want to put it out into the world, don't let anything else stop you. And I think even your own critic, your own self, because I think sometimes that's the hardest one, is in your head saying, I don't know, like maybe no. But I really believe if you feel it in your gut, you got to do it. And that's even how I felt with this book for so long. I was like, I'm not a writer. I'm a blogger, like, it kept me up at night because I knew this messaging. I felt so strongly I needed to put this out into the world. And I was hopeful that it could find that one woman who needs to hear it, whether it's like trying to navigate the early years of motherhood or trying to love herself or trying to carve her own path. So it's really just knowing that you absolutely have the ability and the gift to put something out there that you want to do, and don't let anything get in your way.
I absolutely love that. And a reminder to listeners, the name of the book is A Coat of Yellow Paint. And we're going to leave the link in the show notes if you want to order a copy. And for listeners out there who want to connect with you in some way, how do they find you?
You can come hang out with me on Instagram. I'm Taza, T-A-Z-A, or my blog is lovetaza.com.
Lovely. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a great conversation.
Yes, thank you, Melissa.
Thanks for listening to the Business Society podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, leave us a review. Your ratings and reviews help more people like you find our podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and share this podcast with someone you think would love it. Until next time, I'm Melissa Houston. And never forget, nobody will ever care about your money as much as you do. So never give your financial power away.